From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quimry. The city and borough of Juneau has a new finance director. Angie Flick has worked in the city's finance department as treasurer since early last year. Before that, she worked in finance for Maricopa County in Arizona.
I feel like I've got a good, well-rounded view of financial operations for a local government, given my past history and now what I've learned here in Treasury.
Flick says she's looking forward to helping the Juneau Assembly and the city manager work on issues like housing and tourism.
I think what's great about a finance department is we're a central organization that underlies everything that the city does.
Flick replaces Jeff Rogers, who announced his resignation in February. At an Assembly Finance Committee meeting last night, Rogers says Flick stood out in a pool of strong internal and external candidates.
She has really been incredible to work with. She's been a leader in the department. If you take the sort of leader in every chair model to heart, Angie has done that.
Flick's first day on the job will be Monday. Rogers will work alongside her until he leaves in June. Young athletes from across the state flocked to Juneau earlier this month to compete in the 2023 traditional games. Ketchikan's Native Youth Olympics team brought home medals in four traditional events, but for athletes, it was a weekend more focused on connection and self-improvement. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
Team Ketchikan hadn't made the trip to the traditional games since 2020 due to COVID-19 and the cost of travel, but this year was a good one for the six-person team to come back. Kyle Worrell, a Native Youth Olympics coach and event coordinator in Juneau, says this month's competition was one of the biggest ever, with more than 200 athletes. Teams from Metlakatla, Prince of Wales Island, Sitka, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Homer, Chickaloon, Seward, Kenai, Whitehorse, and even New Mexico made the trip.
So it continues to grow every year. We continue to see more teams every year.
Petersburg's team finished the competition as the first place middle school team. Mount Edgecombe High School was the overall first place high school team. Athletes from Homer and Juneau earned sportsmanship awards. Over the two-day event, Team Ketchikan pulled in two first-place finishes, a third-place finish, and two fourth-place spots. Worrell says he's gotten to know the Team Ketchikan athletes over the years.
So it was really great to see Ketchikan at the event this year, and they did really awesome. Their results were really great.
The traditional games include a handful of events modeled after traditional Alaska Native skills. The one-hand reach calls for athletes to put all their weight on one wrist as they balance and touch a sealskin ball. In the wrist carry, an athlete hangs from a pole by one wrist as they're carried as far as they can hang on. Ketchikan's Samson Oliver took first place for the wrist carry in the high school boys division, and Sophie Linda Agoni took first for the high school girls' one-hand reach. Henry Agoni earned third place for the middle school boys' one-hand reach and fourth for the wrist carry. Kendall Hamilton earned fourth place in the middle school girls' archery division and fourth place for the middle school girls' seal hop. Even with those impressive scores, Worrell says there's more to the competition than clinching a medal or setting a record.
It's all about learning because you're going to be on the floor with the other athletes and they're going to give you advice and encouragement and you're going to come out better than before.
That's the mentality that Ketchikan's team took to Juneau. Starla Agoni is one of the team's coaches.
The energy was like no other energy, positive, very encouraging, a lot of support in the gyms.
Agoni says that all of Ketchikan's athletes set new personal records. Ketchikan's Samson Oliver set a new wrist carry record. He hung on in the event for more than 200 feet. The games place a heavy emphasis on support, camaraderie, and culture. Agoni's youngest son, Henry Agoni, got to experience that firsthand when he was chosen for the blanket toss as he celebrated his 12th birthday. Depending on their experience level, an athlete might flip or bounce on a walrus skin pulled taut and shaken by their community. It's traditionally a celebration after a successful whale hunt, and Agoni says it was an honor to watch her son sail through the air.
Only about 12 athletes were chosen to do the blanket toss over the two-day span. So he was chosen. He was the first athlete to be able to do the blanket toss, which is a great experience in itself.
Kyle Worrell, the NYO coach in Juneau, was watching too.
Hopefully it's a really memorable experience for Henry to go on the blanket toss. It's kind of an adrenaline rush to be thrown up by a group of people. And it's always exciting to watch, so I'm glad we got somebody from Ketchikan on the blanket.
There will be a state competition later this month in Anchorage, but Team Ketchikan won't be making the trip. They need to fundraise to get there. Whether through what Coach Agoni is calling a kickathon or a good old-fashioned bake sale, the team hopes to get to state next year. And as always, Agoni hopes that anyone interested in joining the supportive group will try it out.
We love to share the cultural aspect, the sportsmanship, the love and support, encouragement, and helping others to choose to be the best that they can be, and encouraging that we can always do better, celebrating our differences and our uniqueness.
She says that's what it's all about. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Willapa Bay in Southwest Washington is the self-styled oyster capital of the world. But can it hold its own crown? Shellfish growers on the bay are alarmed by an invasion of non-native European green crabs. They want more action against what is a coast-wide problem. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports from the waters of Willapa Bay.
Okay, there we have some green crab right off the bat.
Warren Cowell owns Willapa Bay Shellfish. He and other oyster and clam growers are hunting down invasive European green crabs.
14, 16.
On the state's dime, Cowell's crew hauls up and empties dozens 17, of traps placed around the commercial clam and oyster beds offshore of Nakata, Washington. The square mesh traps come up, filled mostly with juvenile native Dungeness crabs, but sprinkled in are darker colored, slightly differently shaped green crabs. Crew member Nico Hora sorts by hand and tosses the native Dungeness back, all the while trying not to get pinched.
Yeah, that's why I have to be careful with it, especially with the Dungeness. The green crab, they don't pinch you that hard, but Dungeness will.
The crew collected 109 green crabs in less than 2 hours.
And that's it.
With over a year of trapping, our numbers still are very high.
Encouragingly, though, it's down from a peak seen last fall. The undesirable European green crabs will be frozen to death and then sent to a landfill. Cowell says the state's trapping numbers show the shallow, sheltered saltwater bay has become a hot spot for the invasive green crabs.
So they'll eat all the shellfish if they get established, then move on to everything else that they can eat, all the habitat, the eelgrass, which is so important, and they even take that out eventually. So what's at stake here is Willapa Bay as a whole, the whole ecosystem and everything that it contributes.
According to the Pacific Shellfish Institute, Washington State is by far the largest producer of Manila clams in the U.S. and a leading producer of oysters. More than two-thirds of the state's oysters come from Willapa Bay. The shellfish industry is the largest private employer in Pacific County, too. State biologists and the local growers say crab trapping is presently the only way to control the invaders that threaten that bounty. Cowell is calling for a trapping blitz this year.
We're at the tipping point if we haven't passed it. And so we have to trap and trap as aggressively as we possibly can, at least to hold the line until we can come up with better solutions.
Which is along the lines of how the state Fish and Wildlife Department is thinking about this. Alan Ployce is the state's aquatic invasive species manager. He says his agency has spare traps and is hiring more seasonal help this year to protect specific high-value sites. They've also hired a research scientist to target green crabs.
This is a problem that's going to persist for a long time, and we're looking at long-term solutions. What are the genetic possibilities for creating, you know, like sterile males or, you know, some other method that we could use?
Ployce says local control seems possible, but eradication at the statewide level is not a realistic goal because ocean currents are constantly resupplying green crab larvae from afar.
They get repopulated by larvae coming from the south and coming from the north, and there's just no bottleneck for that larvae.
While Washington and British Columbia are battling the European crabs, Oregon's Department of Fish and Wildlife is taking a different tack. They're just monitoring and letting recreational crabbers go after them. The invaders are edible, but have little meat in their shells and don't grow as large as Dungeness crabs, so they're generating minimal interest from sports fishers. Oregon's shellfish program leader says several state agencies are now trying to figure out if Oregon should begin an active control effort, too. I'm Tom Bonsi in Nakata, Washington.
This is KTOO.